Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes, and this is the audio diary of my life. It's the 20th, I think, of May 2026. Just looking at the volume on this one to make sure, I think I've got it a little bit loud. I'm not quite sure why the other day, was it yesterday, it was a bit, the audio sounded a bit strange, but I think that's because I inadvertently moved a setting, not the volume so much, but the setting of the position of the microphones on this Zoom recorder, which is why it sounded a little bit odd. So apologies for that, my lovely listener. It is 7 o'clock on a very overcast day here in town, looking out window, and it looks a bit grim. So I'm going to make myself another cup of coffee. Well, I inadvertently got up at 5:30, thinking it was 6:30. So we had a cup of tea and then went back to bed for an hour. And you know what it's like, you sort of then doze off a bit. But anyway, not to worry, but I'm going to make myself another one. I'll just find out from Her Majesty if she would like another. Would you like another cup of tea? Righto, I'll come and get the cup in a minute. That's the funny arrangement here today. Now, I did have something to talk about in today's one, but for the moment it has gone out of my mind, but it will be coming back, I am sure. I just need to get the domesticity going. There's a chap who I watch, a pipe-smoking chap. He's just a similar thing now. I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years, as you know, and people kind of listen in and they go, what's he going to talk about? And they have to wait, don't you? You wait for the whole domesticity, as it might be referred to. I don't know whether it is, whether that's the correct terminology. As I make a cup of coffee in the morning and get myself going. But this bloke does a similar sort of thing on YouTube. And then he chats about various subjects. I'm just letting the cat in. Right, Mo. So I let the cat in very early. Out, rather. Very early. So he's done all his ablutions and things. Yes, and so this chap does it on YouTube. And it's funny because on YouTube, I think, or in a video format, one can be a lot more impatient to get the subject matter going. And also because it has a title which sort of implies what the subject matter is, and you're sort of waiting, going, oh, I've got to wait for him to get a cup of coffee. This chap, he's a very nice bloke, but he walks out into the garden, but you are sort of thinking, come on, mate, get on with it. But in audio, and I don't know whether this is true, this is only my surmise, and you're the ones that can tell me, and from some feedback that I've had over the years, people have said that they don't mind so much the erratic nature. And I think that is because audio is in many ways a superior format, because of the fact that you don't have to be rigidly watching something. So you're less likely to be impatient, for one thing, because you can get on and do other things and just have it on in the background, like radio. And but also, of course, the sounds that you hear, which are not the sounds of your own environment, somebody else's environment, cause the mind to create the pictures. So that's my analysis. You might think that's completely wrong. Here we go. Another cup. That's very, very. It gives me a lot of pleasure to make you a cup of tea in the morning, and then get you up, get you working. He jests. Now, what was I going to? I just got to do Julia's, and then we'll get on. I have a
a new tobacco to try. Well, I've tried it yesterday, but it wasn't burning very well, so I'm going to try it again. Right, let's get you this tea on the go. Right, nearly there, my gentle listener. No, but I had a subject, I'm trying to think what it was. I'm sure it will come back to me. Just get this served. Oops. That's, I suppose, and the other thing is, of course, with the audio, I think you can have more time. Some people like a shorter listen, I suppose, but... Anyway, my audience over the years has got used to the sort of... if I put some hot water into my coffee as well. Got used to my rambling nonsense, and they either listen because they enjoy it, or they enjoy suffering, or not. So, quite why I'm analysing something that I've been doing for 20 years, I do not know. But there we are. And when I don't do it, I do miss it. But we have been quite busy and you know, been sort of just trying to get lots of things done, and it's not so easy. Right, I'll take this up to Julia. Hello, Mo. I know you'll be hungry. He's got a little bell on him. He used to have a bell on him. Not a cow bell, but just a little cat bell, so that one... can see him, well, hear him. Obviously, I can see him because I've still got one eye. So he's got one bell, and I've got one eye. And between us, it works out very well. Here we go.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Right. It is just after 7 o'clock, madam.
Thank you.
No problem, madam. Right. Shall I get my pipe? And imbibe and have a chat to you. And by the time I get that going, it'll be time to say goodbye. Oh, and you'll be going, why do I listen to this babbling idiot? But I think laughing at yourself is a... Oh, you want to go out again? Is that because there was no food immediately ready for you? Off you go then. Yes. Is that because... Oh, I forgot what I was going to say now. Laughing at ourselves is very important. I think people take themselves far too seriously. Life can be too serious, can't it? And it's interesting, that's sort of on the verge of what I wanted to talk about. I think life is full of complications and worries and frets with an F, and threats with a TH, and threats from authorities, you know, and we get a bit concerned, don't we, by all these things, because there are people out there, or corporations mostly, who are faceless organisations. There's a lot of tobacco in that I didn't smoke. Faceless organisations who seem to have an inordinate amount of authority over people. And I find this quite odd, that a corporation, including bodies like local authorities, who are not real people, they are, you know, it's a concept, it's an idea. A corporation is a concept, an idea. It's not a real person, because you, as I've mentioned many times in the past, you can't take that person to court, can you? There is no Mr. Tesco's, for example. If you had a problem with Tesco's, I'm not suggesting that there is a problem with Tesco's, I'm just using that as an example. But if you did have a problem with a corporation, there is no, you know, there's only a representative. What am I looking for? Have I already... Oh, yes, I've put the... I'm a bit daft sometimes. There's only a representative. Oops. So I just find it strange that a incorporated body, which is not a real person, has more authority over an individual, a man or woman, than themselves, if you see what I mean. They have more authority over men and women than men and women should have over an idea, over a concept. I've always find that a bit peculiar, and because the men and women are obviously alive, and a corporation is not alive. It has employees who do the work of that corporation, but it's not alive. It's not an actual being. It can act, it seems to act on many occasions for many people like a monster, you know, big heaving dragon that other people go out and do the bidding for, but it can't actually do it. It is a sort of legless monster, and yet people who work for it somehow, especially the higher echelons, they seem to make the money, even though the corporation in and of itself does make some money, well, makes a lot of money to keep it going, to employ more people and have shareholders and all these sort of things. And it's just an engine, isn't it, really? I mean, when you think about it, it's just an engine. It doesn't live, it doesn't think, and it doesn't breathe. It's an engine. And yet that engine, I suppose, it is like when you have a problem, say, with a utility company, with the council, with the government. It is like, I suppose, let's say it's a traction engine. It's got many parts to it. Some parts which are absolutely vital and superior, and some parts which are just small, like nuts and bolts. And it would sit abandoned in a hedge, perhaps, with weeds growing around it, once it had been built, if nobody did anything with it, if it was never started, if it just stood there. And that, to me, is what a corporation is a bit like, although a traction engine is rather too nice a analogy, really. But anyway, whatever. We'll a steamroller. Let's call it a steamroller, even though steamroller still has a certain sort of romance about it. But it would just be lifeless. It would just sit there doing nothing, like, you know, like any piece of machinery, if it wasn't for human beings to operate it. Now, once you've got human beings operating it, and it can turn into a monster. I'm not saying it is a monster by definition, but it can turn into a monster. And oddly, by the decisions of the human beings. So, and this, I think, is very interesting. I don't know whether you agree with this or not, but let's face it, you know, somebody standing in the middle of the road, let's say a small child is standing in the middle of the road, and the steamroller is coming down, being operated by a human being. And the little child is saying, "I'm not moving from the road." And the steamroller is just rolling towards him, driven by the driver. Now, the driver of that would have to be the CEO, would he not, of a corp? You know, if I'm, my metaphor is of a corporation. And the CEO is saying, as the driver, or if he's sitting behind the driver, let's say, and he's saying, "Driver, keep going. If that little child does not move, run him over." Now, the decision is being made by a human being to run the machinery over if the little child, for whatever reason, that little child does not want to move, or it doesn't have to be a little child, it could be any a man or woman or whatever. I'm just using it as an analogy. If that little child does not move, or couldn't move, or was unable to move, you know, in as much as I am unable to pay my council tax, for example, or I disagree that you should be rolling down this road, and so therefore I'm going to stand here and say I disagree with it. The driver, well, the CEO, the person telling the driver, if there is a person telling the driver, or otherwise it's the driver himself, but the operator of the corporation, the bulldozer, bulldozes over the child one way or another. Now, that might be, you know, they come and say, well, if you don't pay up, we're going to send the boys round, and or we'll evict you from your house, or whatever nasty stuff goes on. And then they turn round and say, well, it's just what we do. It's the policy. It's just the steamroller has to drive on a road. That's our policy. And you were in the way. And it's not personal, but you were in the way. And, you know, it's then, if it goes to court or whatever, the engine driver or let's just say there was just the driver of the steamroller, for the sake of ease, who made the decision to run over the child. And really and truly, he hides behind the fact that it's a steamroller. Oh, it's the machine, you know, the machine can only go in one direction. It's the machine. It's nothing to do with us, Gov. We don't have any involvement. You know, it's just the policy of the corporation. The corporation's policy is that if you don't abide by our rules and regulations, we will steamroller over you. And I think that's where we've lost our human sensibilities, because we've made with these monsters, these machines, these inert corporations. We've given other human beings an excuse to operate a machine that causes pain and anguish in people, and they seem to have a way out of it and just say, well, it's the policy of the machine. You know, the train only runs on tracks, and if somebody stands in the way, I'm afraid the train can't steer or veer away from it. The steamroller, there's not enough room for the steamroller to go anywhere else. And therefore, if the child gets in front of it, it will get flattened. You know, the decision of the outside of the machine is the problem, not the machine itself. And, you know, but did the child have any involvement whatsoever in the steamroller at the beginning? You know, did it make the steamroller? Was it on the driver's seat of the steamroller? Was the woman tied to the rails have any involvement with the train that came and ran her over? No, of course she didn't. They don't. Does the ordinary everyday person, man and woman living in their house, when the council decide that they're going to do whatever, enact their policies, which might be detrimental to that human being? Sorry, there's a light in the pipe now. Did that individual make the corporation, the local council? Unlikely. And yet, they are at the mercy of the machine. That surely should not be right. Anyway, I've got onto that subject inadvertently, as you heard. It wasn't really what I was intending to get onto, really. But one's got to try and find ways of... Well, I've got to try and find ways of explaining why I believe, on the whole, the corporations are not good for humanity. Now, a lot of people may argue and say, but if it wasn't for big corporations, you wouldn't have a lot of things that we do have, such as in the manufacturing of things which are much cheaper because you can manufacture at scale and produce a lot of things than an individual artisan, I don't know, let's say sofa maker or chair maker or kitchen cabinet maker or, you know, car maker. I guess if you wanted to buy a car, you could, and let's say, I don't know what an average brand new car is these days, but let's say for the sake of argument, it's 10 grand. Could you make an engine, seats, steering wheel, wheels, and all those bits and pieces, could you make them from a small business of, say, I don't know, 10 people at a cheaper price than a production line? And would it be as nice or as comfortable or as, you know, easy to use? Now, I don't actually know, but I suspect that a small business potentially could make a car that was drivable for less than the production line could make it, but it would be a totally different type of car. I think it would be, you know, because for one thing, I mean, there may be, you'd have to have it so it's safe, it's not going to fall apart. But again, we have the corporation of conformity, that things have to conform to road standards and safety and all of this, which in my mind, yes, you can see the benefit of that on one hand. On the other hand, it knocks out a lot of innovation. Why can't I get the adjective version of it, or the adverb of it? Anyway, innovation. And cars used to have character, didn't they? Cars used to have character, and the early cars, you know, the curious old things. Cars today have all these so-called labour-saving things, or these electronics. They've become something which the average man can no longer fix. If I think back, how old are my children? 30 years ago, I had a Vauxhall Viva. Strange old car. But the steering rack broke. And I went down to a local spares place, bought a new steering rack and a Haynes manual and a couple of spanners, fixed it myself. I wouldn't even dream of doing that. Used to change spark plugs, the starter motor, air filter, all those sort of things. Used to do all of that. Now, because everything was sort of reachable in the car and it was relatively easy to do. Now you have everything manufactured in these big sort of units. It makes it very difficult. It's hard to get to. You need special machinery. The tools have been designed to be quite different from your normal average tools. And, you know, you just can't do it as easily as you once could. And, of course, the whole business with the electronics. My van, for example, a light came up on the dashboard saying that there was something wrong with the engine. So you think, crikey, I wonder what that is. But when the light came up, I looked in the manual and it said, oh, you need to have the engine plugged into a computer and it'll tell you what's wrong with it. It could be a number of different things. So I thought, right, OK, well, I went to the local station, local garage. and said, could you tell me how much it costs to plug in just so I can get diagnostics from my van, please? And they said, yeah, we can do that. £89 plus VAT. I said, oh. I said, and presumably then whatever's wrong, that obviously is on top. Yes, parts and labour would be on top of whatever the problem was. I said, thanks very much, goodbye. I have a mobile mechanic now that I use. When I said to him, could you do a diagnostic? He said, yeah, I've got the gear. He came round, plugged it in. He charged me £30. And then he told me what the problem was. It's a glow plug. He says there's an intermittent problem with the glow plug, nothing to worry about too much, you know, at some point get it changed. I said, to be honest with you, the van does need a service, so I'll probably get you to do that. So he said, fine, I'll work you out a price for a service for all the bits and pieces, and it'll be a hell of a lot cheaper than anywhere else. So, anyway. Quite why we got onto that. Oh, yes, so that, you know, in the old days, everything was quite simple. So, going back to my main point, I guess, is could a small business create the things that we use? Probably a similar price. It might be a bit more innovative. There we go, got the word out in the end. Innovative, different, have more character, wouldn't be as bland, wouldn't be as, designed to fail or be made as cheaply, because of the lowest common denominator. And this is why I think we've allowed, which is a shame, and so it's unfortunate then that we've allowed corporations and big industry to dominate the world with its sort of one look at things, which is of course the profit line all the time. And shareholder, I mean, I've spoken about bloody shareholders and all of that, and why that is awful, in my opinion. They should not have the power they have. The customer should be, the customer and the employees should be the central focus of any business, to give the customer good quality product and good quality service, and the employees good jobs with well paid and a good environment to work in, and all those things. And that should be what the directors of a business is aiming to do, as well as try and making a profit or what have you, and reinvesting and keeping that business afloat. But it seems that instead the businesses, they now have the reverse thing. The customer is just, you're a number, especially in big corporations, utility companies and what have you. You're just a number. People don't care individually about anybody anymore. The policies that they come up with are too rigid. You cannot change the policy. You cannot say, look, I can see you're suffering. I'll lower your bill, or don't worry about paying this month. We'll just write it off. Or if you want to change something, I've had it where you verbally agreed and we're holding it to you, and it's £300 until next year. You've got to pay us or we're taking you to court. I mean, these businesses are not aimed at humans. It is the steamroller and the child again. It's like, instead of the driver going, look, there's a child in the road, we've got to stop. We can't run the child over. We're doing this flattening the road business so that people can drive on the road. They don't want to drive over the corpse of a child. And the child wants to live, and the child just wants to cross the road and do whatever. We can't. Corporations are inflexible by their policies. They're not human in and of themselves, and they do not aim for the human person being at the end of the day. And that's why I think they're abhorrent and unnecessary. And because of their policies, they've got rid of they've got rid of creativity. Everything's very rigid, and it does seem it's profit driven for the top board and the shareholders, and everybody else is left out in the cold. There you go. That's my diatribe today. I've been smoking. I'll probably feature it on the next smoking channel. Rattray's, Buckingham. I better go and get this uploaded. Thank you for listening. I will talk to you soon. Toodle-pip.